Hello and welcome to episode 3 of In Suspense, a brand new video podcast or vodcast for fans and writers of crime fiction. I'm Leslie Cara and my co-host is Lauren North. Now, on the last show we did, we interviewed the legendary S.J. Watson and we had a really brilliant chat with Steve. And he gave us a fascinating insight into what it was like for him following the phenomenal success of his debut novel, Before I Go to Sleep. And as well as that, he talked about some really, he talked about his writing process as well and gave us a fascinating insight into that too. And so if you have missed that episode, then it's still there. You can watch it or listen to it. And if you haven't yet read his latest book, Final Cut, then please do, because it's really good.
Very good.
We've both read it and absolutely loved it. And this show, this week, we are interviewing another psychological suspense author, Tracy Buchanan. But before we do that, I think Laurie has a message for our American listeners and or viewers.
Yes, and the message is hello and welcome, because we were absolutely thrilled last week to realise that we've got some viewers from across the pond, which is really exciting for us. So thank you for tuning in and hello. And it made me think that we should probably say whereabouts we're from as well, because I don't suppose many people know. But, so I live on the Essex-Suffolk borders in East Anglia, about an hour from London, and Leslie is only about half an hour away from me on a coastal Essex town. So yes, we're both sort of in the same area, aren't we?
We are, yes. Yes, I live in a small coastal town called Frinton, which is very much the inspiration for the setting in my first two novels. Yeah. I called that Flintstead, so, you know, very different name.
Oh, I just love Frinton. It's beautiful.
And we've met, actually. We've met a couple of times in Frinton for coffee,
haven't we? Yes, it's so nice there. And so how is your week going, Leslie? What are you up to at the moment, work-wise?
Work-wise, okay, and I have been trying to throw myself into work lately because the news has been so grim, hasn't it, everywhere, that I think work is the only thing we've got any control over at the moment, isn't it? So I've been trying not to watch the news, although of course I always do find myself doing that. I've finished the checking the proofs for novel number 3, The Dare.
So I've got it on my shelf, actually. Oh! It's waiting to be read.
Oh,
very excited. Just got to finish my edits, but yeah.
Oh, that's very exciting. It's also quite nerve-wracking, isn't it, when you know it's gone out to readers, because you think, oh, it's too late to do anything now. So that's that. I've also been working on my new website, or rather Charlotte Duckworth, author. She's a fabulous author, a psychological suspense author too. What did she write? The Rival and Unfollow Me, which I think is out in paperback soon.
Or... Yes, I just saw her unboxing it on Twitter today, actually. And I should also say that I absolutely loved Unfollow Me, one of my favourite books from last year.
Well, I haven't read that yet, but I certainly intend to. As soon as I saw her taking the books out of the box, I thought, I like the sound of that one. So, yes, so the wonderful Charlotte Duckworth is not only a very talented author, but she is also a really talented website designer. And that's her little sort of, I don't know if it's a little a business on the side she does, as well as writing. And, I'm absolutely thrilled with my new website. And so that's been occupying me, learning how to edit it and how to go into the sort of back pages. And
I'm not very good at all that, I have to say, so I might follow your lead on that at some point.
Well, Charlotte's very good at being very patient with me and helping me do things, so yes, that's kept me going, and really just throwing myself into writing book 4. As I say, you know, that's sort of, I'm sort of seeking solace in writing at the moment. And I think it's always a really exciting stage, writing the first draft. I it's my favourite bit.
Yeah. So, yeah, do you have like a word count that you try and get to every day, or are you a bit more relaxed?
I'm more relaxed about that. For me, it's more important that I've somehow moved the story of the novel on.
Yeah.
And even if that, I mean, I do try to write about sort of 600 words to 1,000 a day if I can, but I never beat myself up if I can't do that. I mean, I think that's why I've never been any good at NaNoWriMo. I have tried that a couple of times, and I always found the pressure of having to write whatever it is, 1400 words a day or whatever, too much. And I'm not one of these people who just can sort of vomit out a first draft. I'm very much, I write and hone as I go, really.
Mm. Yeah.
What about you, Laurie? What have you been up to the last
weeks? Have been wading through my structural edits for book three, for my psychological suspense books. Yeah, it's been really tough, actually, because I didn't get a massive change required. It's more like lots and lots of little things. So I think I went into them thinking, this is going to be so easy. How nice, not going to be a problem. And actually, I think I'm still doing that thing where I pretty much feel like I'm rewriting every single chapter. I've cut like 13,000 words so far, and I'm only halfway through. I've been adding words as well, but I've got like this cut file that just keeps sloshing it in. Yes, I feel a bit better this week. Last week I thought I'm not going to do it. I'm going to miss my deadline. But I think I've worked over the weekend. I'm getting closer, so I feel a bit better now. But yeah, I'm hoping next time we talk, I'll be a bit more relaxed and won't be quite so frenzied about it. Yes, so it's just edit. But obviously, I've got some great ideas in the back of my mind now for my next book I desperately want to work on, which is always the way, isn't it, when you've got something you're in the middle of doing and then this idea comes. So I'm just ignoring it now and hoping that it's still there in a couple of weeks' time.
Yes, that fresh, shiny idea always holds much more appeal than the hot mess that you're working on at the moment. No, I'm not saying your novel's a hot mess, but you know what I mean. When we get our structural edits, that's how it feels, isn't it?
Yeah, always in structural edits, like, maybe I should just start everything again. I think I'm making some progress, though.
Oh, that's really good to hear.
That's good. Oh, yes.
So our topic for this week is the importance of supporting other writers. And, well, you know, my view on that is that it's incredibly important to support and promote other writers, because I don't think we're not in competition with each other. No. I mean, maybe there's some good natured rivalry, I suppose, between some authors. I don't know. But for me, it's a case of there are so many readers out there. And if readers are enjoying books, then they're going to want more and more books. And so if you're promoting other authors and helping them, then I think that's good for everybody. We all benefit from that. And I mean, it's the same with podcasts. I don't know about you, Laurie, but I devour podcasts, particularly at night when I can't sleep, because I sometimes, not all the time, but I sometimes suffer from insomnia and I wake up at night and I listen to podcasts. And so if there's a new one, I devour that as well. And it's just another one to listen to. It's the same with books, isn't it? There are so many books out there. And so I certainly believe that supporting other writers and tweeting their success stories is really, really important and benefits all of us.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it almost, this whole idea of supporting other authors almost falls into two branches in my mind. There's the career branch where, you know, we're supporting each other work-wise. So like, I remember when The Perfect Betrayal came out, my debut, and you were reading it and TM Logan was reading it. And having that support and that backing made such a huge difference to my debut. So there's that side of things. And I certainly try and make sure I'm reading books from different publishers and from authors at different points in their career, trying to also sort of help as I've been helped in that way. And then there's the other branch, which is about sanity, I think, where you're supporting each other in a way that keeps us sane. So just like being able to pick up the phone and getting on Twitter and having a chat with someone, for me, that's sort of the same as getting up from your office chair in an office and getting into the kitchen to make coffee and having a chat with someone. You know, we all know what it's like. So if I say to you, I'm sludging with my edits, you know exactly what I mean. And it just helps to feel like you're not alone anymore, I think. So I would be lost now, having found this network and found this support, to go without it. I think it must be so hard to feel alone in this process. So.
Definitely. And I think that that's possibly one of the reasons why I didn't write, I didn't sort of persevere with my writing when I was younger, because when I was starting to write, there wasn't Twitter or Facebook, and I felt very isolated because I didn't really know anybody else who wanted to write. I did try and join a few writers' groups, but it wasn't the same. Now I think there's such a lot of amazing support online that that's a real encouragement for aspiring writers that I would have really, you know, really loved when I was starting out. So,
I completely agree. I was thinking exactly the same. When I wrote my book before Twitter, my first book before Twitter, when Facebook hadn't really had like the whole group thing, it was all much more about friends chatting. Yeah. And I was thinking exactly the same thing. It was only when I went to a writing Christmas party and I sort of got sucked into this little group and they were like, come and join us, we're over here on Facebook. And I think that just changed things for me massively. But I would say that there are hundreds of groups out there now, and that is fantastic. But if anyone's listening who feels that they are not enjoying being in a group, don't be in it. Like, there's so many lovely supportive places. If you are not feeling supported with a group of people, don't be in that group, come and join another group. So yeah, and that actually brings us on to our guest today, doesn't it? Because we've got a wonderful guest to talk about this exact topic of the importance of supporting other authors. And it's someone who knows so much about it and who I've met and who's been really supportive to me. And that is Tracy Buchanan.
Hello, Tracy Buchanan. Welcome to episode 3 of In Suspense. And thank you for being our guest.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here. I've been watching you guys the last few podcasts. I've really enjoyed them. So yeah,
you're the one.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to introduce you properly. So I'm going to have to put my glasses on so I can read what I've typed out here. So Tracy Buchanan is the author of women's fiction and psychological suspense novels, including the Kindle number one bestsellers Wall of Silence and My Sister's Secret. She has worked as a travel magazine editor and a social media consultant, and now dedicates her time to writing and procrastinating on Facebook. So join the club. I mean, I think we all do a bit of procrastination on Facebook.
Yeah, it's when you get to that difficult plot point and you're like, I'm sure I can just have a little look on Facebook or look at something else just to avoid it. Yeah, that's what I tend to do.
I'm the same. Yes, we've got a question. My first question is, so you've had a really interesting publication journey, Tracy. I believe your first book was actually a young adult paranormal novel. Mm-hmm. And then you've switched genre to more book club fiction or beach noir, as I think Harper Collins described it as. And now you're writing psychological suspense with Lake Union. So can you tell us a little bit about your writing journey and how you came to be published and sort of how you've moved genres?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I've started out with a young adult novel. And actually before then, I'd written loads of novels and trunked them. You know, we've all written all those novels, sort of half written them and put them away. But I always used to read crime and stuff. But then I really got into like the young adult side, you know, like Stephanie Meyer's Twilight. Yeah. And I just went through those novels so quickly. I was obsessed with them. I loved them, which wasn't like me in a way. It's just like I'm really obsessed. And I thought, I want to carry this feeling on, you know, this sort of teen. And I saw that the teen market was doing really well. So we probably thought I'd have a bit of a commercial mind as well. So I came up with this idea of a ballet dancer that falls in love with a shapeshifter. And I wrote it really quickly and it was great. It was, you know, I just loved that cathartic experience of getting it all down. And that's how I got my first agent. So I sent it out and actually got quite a lot of interest because I think it was on the crest of a wave with this real, you know, Stephanie Meyer young adult phase. And I was really excited. I thought I'd get a deal in the UK, but actually I got a deal in Germany, which was a bit random, but it was brilliant to get a debut novel. My debut novel was a deal in Germany. It's such a enthusiastic market. And I know a lot of authors and you know, people reading this will understand that it's just such an exciting market to be in. And that sort of introduced me to the world of having readers. And it was a brilliant introduction. But I always wanted to, you know, I was darker. I wanted to write darker stuff and dark stuff that was too dark for the young adult world. Mm. So, and my agent had taken me on as a young adult author. So we just sort of we weren't singing off the same hymn sheet, and we parted ways. I decided to part ways with her. And that was quite a big decision for me. And I think a lot of people have been through that as well, a lot of authors, and people are scared to do that. But it was, she was a lovely agent, but it was the right decision for me. And I did actually think I'd get an agent quickly, but I didn't. But I wrote a kind of gothic horror story, like more of an adult vibe to it, and queried that, but that didn't get picked up. So I got like 75 rejections or something, some, you know, 75 plus rejections, and that taught me about rejection, and I decided to give up. And then I think I don't know about you guys, when you, as your life changes, your genres change a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the woman's fiction side of me, I wanted to start a family, I got married, and that kind of, the emotions involved in that, and I struggled with infertility, kind of drew me towards the woman's fiction side of things. And that's where my novel, The Atlas of Us, came about. And I didn't expect that to get published. I just wrote it as a cathartic experience, but it got me an agent and it got me a deal with HarperCollins. And from that, I kind of wrote similar things. So it was kind of woman's fiction with a dark edge, like the family secrets and, you know, a bit of darkness there. So I've always straddled that women's fiction and psychological suspense genre. That was my stable stuff with HarperCollins. And then I wanted to go even darker again. So I started to write more psych suspense stuff, and I decided to move over to Lake Union with that. I mean, Lake Union is an Amazon imprint, and they represent sort of book club fiction, women's fiction, and that kind of psychological suspense. So it was a really good home for me. And I feel comfortable now. I feel like this is the area. I'll probably change my mind, you know, in a couple of years, but this is how it might, yes, to my stage of life, it feels right. You know, this psychological suspense drama that I'm really enjoying. That's how it all happened.
Lovely. Fabulous. I mean, we were talking to S.J. Watson in the last show about setting, because his latest novel is set in a place called Blackwood Bay, which is based on a real life location. And, you know, many of your previous novels were set in coastal locations, weren't they? I think The Atlas of Us was that in Thailand, wasn't it? After the tsunami.
So a lot, because I was a travel editor, a lot of my novels were set in different, those earlier novels were set in different beach locations around the yes. world. So it's sort of half, a lot of it is set in Exmoor in the UK. But also Thailand, so it sort of deals with the tsunami that happened over there and the repercussions of that. So yeah, and
but with your latest, you've chosen to set it in a forest community, yeah. haven't you? Wall of Silence, and yeah. and I think your next novel is that Circle of Doubt. That's also going to be set in the same location. Yeah. So I was wondering if you would like to tell us a little bit about, first of all, about the Wall of Silence. Give us the sort of the blurb, if you like, and then yeah. maybe. Tell us why you've switched to a sort of forest location.
Yeah, so it's different from what I've written before in terms of location. It's a stable community location, not jumping around from to different places. And it's a lot darker. And yeah, so it came out back in March, April, and it's a psychological suspense. And I've got it written here. Every author feels really weird when they have to sum up their idea in one sentence. You have to have it kind of ready, but set in Forest Grove, an eco village in the middle of the forest, and it's about a mother who comes home to find her husband injured on the floor and their three children surrounding him, and they know that she just knows instinctively that one of the kids has done it, and she needs to figure out which one and why. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of drives into that maternal instinct of wanting to protect your children and instinctively knowing they've done something wrong, but also wanting to sort of do the right thing. And it seems to have struck a chord with readers, because it sold really well and you know, went straight to the Kindle number one. So, you know, I've been delighted with that. So I was quite nervous because it was a bit of a change. So that has gone down well. And you mentioned about the community and the community of Forest Grove. I think looking at the reviews, and I do look at my reviews, not every single one, but I do look at some of them. It's that community vibe that really seems to strike a chord. And that this idea of living in this eco-village in the middle of a forest, it's quite claustrophobic, very beautiful, but there's something hidden underneath the layers. Mm. And I kind of knew from a commercial point of view that I really would like the idea of writing something that's set in this, almost like a series, without going too far into the series genre, but it's like it's set in the same area. So now that people have loved Wall of Silence, they'll be more likely to want to read even more about Forest Grove and read my next book. So that was a little bit of a hard-headed commercial decision on that side.
So will some of the characters from Wall of Silence reappear in Circle of Doubt, or is it just set in the same location with different characters?
So each book will focus on different characters. They may have cropped up very casually in past books. So a lot of Wall of Silence, it's normal narrative, but alongside that are Facebook entries. So it's this, that there are entries from a sort of Facebook community group. I don't know if you guys have a community group for your local village or town. They're just hilarious. And just some of the stuff that comes up. And I really wanted to feature that because I think nowadays community isn't just about going to the village hall or going to the shops or going to the cafe. It's also online as well. And so a lot of the characters that crop up on the Facebook sort of group, you see in the next novel as well. So yeah, they're all kind of, the community is the same. It's just focused on different stories and different people each time.
Oh, that's fantastic. Really looking forward to that one because, you know, The Wall of Silence was such a brilliant hook. I absolutely loved it.
You read it actually, Leslie. Yeah, so it's so great that you read that. So yeah, it's that's what I wanted. And I think I've talked about this before. It's just thinking that I wanted a really, really strong hook for readers to be able to pick it up and just know, right, I know what this book's going to be about. And just drive them to it straight away. So,
And talking about community, and that brings us on really nicely to our topic, which is the importance of supporting other writers. So you've obviously got a social media and marketing background, and then you, over quite a few years, I think, have had sort of a blog, thesavvywriters.co.uk, and a Facebook group that's really popular. So what was your reasoning about wanting to sort of almost build this community for us? What made you decide to sort of take that on?
I think a couple of years ago, I think it started out a couple of years ago, there were a lot of events, like author, that, do you remember those before the pandemic? The events that we used to go to.
Yes.
We miss them. I went to a couple of, like, an agent party, a publisher party. This sounds like authors just go swanning about all the time. It's actually quite rare, and we get so excited when we get the chance. But there were two events in one week, and I was just talking to lots of other authors. And what really struck us all is that there's so much advice and information out there for aspiring authors. Mm-hmm. So how to write, how to get a publisher, how to get an agent. And there's lots of advice for self-published authors. So there's some really great groups out there if you want to publish your own stuff. But I felt there was a gap. There wasn't much out there for authors with publishers. So how to handle that relationship with your publisher and the sort of unique elements of being a published author. You've already gone through those hurdles of getting your book finished and getting it published. What happens after that? And I don't know about you guys, but there's a sense of, like, mystery shrouded around it. You know, people, you would, on social media, you'd see all the lovely stories, the success stories, but it's not often you heard about the realities. So I think I was a bit drunk, actually, and I came back, sat in my hotel, my premier inn hotel room. I was like, do you know what? I'm going to set up a group. I'm just going to set up a little Facebook group for the people that I've been chatting to here. And we can just talk about the problems we have. It's closed, it's private. We won't allow any publishing staff in. We won't allow aspiring authors in or indie authors because they have loads of stuff already. And it'll just be for published or traditionally published authors. And I sent it to a few of the people I've been talking to the night before. And it just spiraled. They told people, more people told people. And I just think there was just such a need for it. Mm. And it's just grown substantially. So it's been a delight to see it grow. And I never expected to see it grow.
Yeah. I mean, how important do you think social media is for writers these days? I mean, from a personal point of view, I love it. I love being on Twitter, probably just because I'm a bit of a twit, really. But love that sort of, that sense of community. I love being on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, but not really sure about Instagram yet. I'm working my way through that. I'm hoping to do more on that. But I mean, some authors I know don't like it at all and really sort of find it a bit of a chore. Would you say it's really vital to be on social media now?
I think it is. I mean, it's a safe option to say you don't have to be. And obviously, the big authors don't really have to be, but they're big authors. They're huge, you know, and they're still on there anyway. I think there's two elements. There's there's the sense of community, because it can be quite a lonely business being an author, and you know, you can find your tribe online. So that's where it's really important. And I think also just retaining readers in particular, I'm not sure that it's of huge importance to get new readers, because I think that's really hard to get new readers on social media unless you're paying for advertising. I think your publisher should be really working hard to do that. But I think to retain your readership, to keep your readership, make sure they remember you and keep coming back to your books, I think it's essential. But I don't think you need to spread yourself thinly. I tend to do all the channels because I just enjoy them. But I think Facebook is the area where it's where you're going to get the most traction, the most engagement. And you know, if you can set up an author can set up a group, or definitely have a Facebook page where they're engaging with their readers. I don't think the other channels are as important. I think Twitter's great for liaising with other authors and for liaising with the publishing community, but you're not really going to find many readers on Twitter. I think that they're on Facebook, and Instagram might be useful for like book bloggers and just having a bit of fun on there. But if you're going to choose one, I would always say choose Facebook. And just dabble a bit with the others.
That's really interesting. So you obviously know so much about this. So how much time do you spend in your day working sort of on the social media side of things, and supporting the Savvy Writers Snug, versus how much time do you write? Do you have certain days you do one and do the other?
The way I'm doing it, I think it changes sometimes, but I think I'm trying to write Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, block intense writing time and try and just ignore everything. And then Mondays, I sort of ease into it anyway, because I'm half asleep. So I do like a bit of admin and do, you know, sort of do some marketing stuff. And then Fridays, my daughter, Scarlett, she now comes back in the afternoon. So it's a bit hard to dedicate a whole day. So that can be a bit of like getting back to people. But actually I don't spend, what I prefer to do is I like to get it over and done within a block. So I spend about half a day on social media stuff for the month, and I get that all done and scheduled. I say I do it. I actually have a virtual PA that helps me now. So she's called Marked as Complete, so she's fabulous. And she schedules all the stuff for me. She comes up with ideas now, and so I don't have to worry as much about it. I try and do my focus. I think author's focus should be on writing. That's the big thing. And I guess what I'm doing the rest of the time, with regards to Savvy Writer's Snug, I'll be checking every morning I check in on my groups. So I have a check that there's been no dodgy porn uploaded or anything like that. I just also out of interest, I like to have a look. And with the Savvy Writer's Snug, it's not a huge amount of work, so it runs itself. And anyone on there, if there was anything dodgy happening, I would get messages, and I have in the past. I've got loads of messages, and I love that. It just runs itself. And I'm not too over the top about it. I think I'm quite laid back about what goes in there. And also I'll check at lunchtime on my phone, and you know, in the evening and stuff. So I don't, you know, I've got to the point, I've got into a nice little routine, and I've got help as well. And I think the reason why I got help is that when I made a little bit of money, royalties or advance, I reinvest that in myself. Mm. So I do spend it on random stuff as well. But I think, right, I'm going to reinvest some of that. And that reinvestment for me is having a virtual assistant. Actually, it's only like a couple of hours a week. It's not like a huge amount of time that I spend on her, but that's a reinvestment to my career, and that helps me focus on the writing and get two books out a year, which is what I aim to do.
Yes. Oh, that sounds really interesting, the virtual assistant. I've
literally just written it down.
Yes. It's now in the to-do list.
Yeah, I'd honestly recommend it, because I think if you think about businesses, they reinvest their profits, not all of it, but a small proportion of their profits, they reinvest back into the business to help it grow. And as authors, we are running a business ultimately. You know, it's a really wonderful creative business. And I just think that if you can free up as much time as possible to write, but also keep your readers engaged, the readers that love your stuff, by getting someone to help you do a few posts a week, you know, I think that's a brilliant investment personally, because as traditionally published authors, we can't do as much stuff like advertising, and we can't pay for that because our publishers do that. So the thing we can do is we can look after our readers, we can create a community of our readers, and we can get help to do that.
What advice would you give, Tracy, to sort of lonely writers out there, maybe who feel a bit isolated? Is joining a social media group enough? I mean, particularly in this sort of time when we're all, you know, we are sort of cut off and we can't get out and meet each other. What sort of advice would you give someone in that position?
I would definitely recommend joining groups. There's lots and lots of groups out there. I mean, the Savvy Writer Snug, I say it's for traditionally published authors. I've also opened it up to independently published authors that are really established, because I think we can learn so much from them. But there's, if you're an aspiring author or an indie author and you're not quite ready to join the Savvy Snug, there's other lots of groups out there. And Facebook is a great tool for just searching for these groups. Mm. And, you know, you can tell by the amount of members there are. And it's, even if you lurk and you read someone saying, you know, writing something that you've been through, it instantly makes you feel better. It makes you not feel alone. And I also recommend like getting in touch with your agent's sisters and brothers and publishers, whoever is published by your publisher and that you kind of have a connection with, or agent, just drop them a message and say, hi, or sort of engage with them on social media. Go on about Facebook, but Twitter's a great way to engage with other authors.
Yeah.
So just using Twitter as a tool to see what other authors are what's going on in their lives, seeing what's going on, you know, connecting with them on Twitter.
That's good advice.
Really good advice. Yeah. Now, Tracy, we've met a couple of times now, haven't we? And when I met you for the Psychological Suspense Association lunch, I got very excited about what my question I'm about to talk to you about. And I think I actually tipped some Prosecco over you, didn't I? Sorry about that again. So you were about to go on a really nice dinner with your husband. Oh, yeah. I was like, talk to me about this.
Yeah, he's like, how much have you been drinking? You really smell.
So we spoke about the importance of continuing to grow and learn as writers, and this idea that you need to be sharpening your tools all the time and adapting, and not, you know, thinking, right, well, I'm a writer now, I can do it, let's just do it, and just continually trying to improve, which is such an empowering idea. And before lockdown, you were planning a Savvy Writers Fest with some fantastic authors giving talks and workshops. So what sort of made you want to do that? And is it something that you hope, will you bring that online at some point, or are you just hoping for things to get back to normal and have it in person next year?
Yeah, I think it's what we were talking about. Like, well, it's great to be online and chat to people, but there's something really special when authors meet up in person. Like, that's why we're all missing things like the Harrogate Festival and different festivals and going out for lunch. There's just, you can't beat that, I don't think. Like, you can't beat the one-on-one getting drunk, having a chat and pouring Prosecco over someone. But yeah, and a lot of the authors on the Snug had said to me when I'd met up with them, oh, would it be great to have like a more of an organised thing where we can learn? And you and I were talking about the fact that there's so much resource out there for aspiring authors, you know, how to write, show, don't tell, all that kind of thing. We know all that. It's the more advanced stuff we want to know from established authors. So I just came up, I just thought, you know what, I'm going to do this event. In London, like a day high-end event where it's for, you know, only published authors. In the morning, I was going to do sort of lots of different chat talks from key people in the industry, and in the afternoon you could choose a workshop with a high profile author, and had Sophie Hannah, Amanda Prowse was involved. So it was all set up and all ready to go, and then it was happening in May, so it's like the worst time for the pandemic to kick off. So I saw, because I'm a bit of a prepper, so I'd heard that this virus was spreading around in January, Feb, and I was like, I honestly don't think this is going to happen in May. And I said it to a few people, they're like, oh, don't be silly, it'll be fine. I was like, no, I just don't think it's going to happen. So luckily I hadn't paid the deposit on the brilliant location venue that I was going to use, and And I just thought, you know, I've got to cut my loss. As soon as I saw it was rising and then Boris had did his doom-mongering speech, I was like, no, this is not going to happen. So it was a real shame. And I do want to do it. I think I do like the idea of doing it virtually, maybe one day. I just worry that there's so much online anyway, and there's just something special about getting in the room all together. So I think I might wait until everything settles down and then do it again, like try and arrange something. Maybe the end of next year, let's really hope.
Let's keep our fingers crossed that happens, because as you say, it's great having all the online events, but we can suffer from sort of screen fatigue, really, can't we? And Zoom fatigue. So
and wouldn't it be wonderful, can you imagine if there's a vaccine found and then things can start happening and we're all together in this wonderful London venue and we're having a glass of champagne just thinking, finally. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I think that's my aim, that's my dream.
Hold on to the dream, yeah.
Yes, definitely. Let's be positive and hope that happens. Now, Tracy, is a sort of a fun question, really. Last time when we were talking to S.J. Watson, his novel was a lot about memory, and so we asked him what the worst thing was he'd ever forgotten. And now in your novel, your main character walks into the room and finds her children, you know, standing over the dead body of her husband. And so and that's no spoiler, everybody, because that's kind of, you know, right at the beginning. So we were wondering, what's the worst thing you've ever walked into a room to find? The worst or the most embarrassing, perhaps?
Oh, God. See, this is a difficult question because I used to work in PR in London. And there's a few things I did walk into rooms and see, but I cannot tell you. Involving a couple of celebrities. And so I will tell you next time we meet up, but I'm not going to broadcast it. So really, the only thing, and this is a really mumsy, mothery thing, but it's walking in to find my little girl at the time. She'll kill me when she sees this. Even now at 7, she'll just be mortified. When I was toilet training her and she was weeing in my slipper. So she was just standing over it weeing in my slipper. So really, that's the only thing I can tell you that I'm allowed to say. But there are some stories that I have got and things that I've walked into. Various parties that I used to go to. So that's the exciting one.
Well, we'll look forward to the off-air discussion then. Laurie, what about you? Have you ever walked into something ghastly?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this, and I think I've walked in and found my kids doing crazy things a few times. But I think actually what springs to mind is once when I was in a room and someone walked in on me. Now, you have to remember that I was 5 years old, so don't hold this against me, but I have in fact two really horrible older brothers. Well, they were when I was younger, and they were constantly taking my teddies and being mean to me. And in my five-year-old head, I thought it'd be a really good idea to get them back by setting a crime up for them. So I got like a massive tub of talcum powder and shook it all over my room, thinking there's no way I do this, if they're going to get the blame. So it's like a real like brother horrible thing to do. And I literally covered my bedroom in talcum powder. It absolutely stank. And my dad walked in as I was doing it. So I was like, it was Ben and Neil. And it wasn't them. It was me holding it. So yes, that was probably the most awful thing that we'd been walked into a room to find. So, yeah. What about you, Leslie?
Well, I think mine was, it was when I was pregnant with my first son, and I was suffering from a lot of morning sickness. And I went down to the kitchen first thing in the morning, feeling really ropey, you know what it's like. And I opened the door. Now, at that point in my life, I had two cats called Betty and Norman. Now, Betty was wonderful. She was a darling little cat. Norman was a maniac. And Norman had taken it upon himself that morning to bring in a live, large blackbird through the cat flap and slaughter it in the kitchen.
Oh, no.
And we had a white kitchen. And so as I opened the door feeling really nauseous, what I was confronted with was blood and feathers and bird gore just splattered up all across the units and the kitchen, and Norman sitting there, you know, with blood on his whiskers thinking, you know, aren't I clever? And that was horrible. So you can imagine having to clean all that up and feeling really sick. But I think that was probably one of the. I mean, I've walked into some embarrassing things, but I won't bore you with those because the people, you know, in concern might even be listening. So, yeah, so that's probably the worst thing.
Sound awful. Well, that just brings us to our very last thing, which is just another bit of fun, which is a quick fire round, Tracy. So I'm going to ask you your preferences, and then you've just got to give me your first answer. Okay.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready. Yeah.
Okay. Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Paperback or ebook?
Ebook.
Pen or keyboard?
Keyboard.
Desk or sofa?
Desk now.
Oh, this is an interesting one for your books. Woodland or beach?
Woodland now.
Cat or dog?
Dog.
Crowded bar or dinner for two?
Dinner for two.
And your favourite season is?
Autumn.
There we are. Brilliant. Well done. That's my favourite season as well.
Oh, thank you so much, Tracy, for, you know, being our guest today. We've really enjoyed having you on.
Oh, it's lovely being on.
And we wish you every success with your novels. When is Circle of Doubt coming out?
So Circle of Doubt is out in January. And actually, just to quickly say, that's, like I said, set in Forest Grove. And it's about a mother called Emma who adopted her daughter Isla 10 years ago. A glamorous family moves into the middle of the forest. And Emma is absolutely convinced the woman in that glamorous family is her daughter's birth mother. But can she prove it before her daughter is taken away forever?
Wow. Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. That sounds amazing. Well, pre-order that now, folks. I'm doing my teacherly finger working. So make sure you get that pre-ordered because that sounds fabulous.
Yes, and thank you for your advice because I've made a few notes as well, actually. Yeah. So, thank you for sharing your wisdom with us and our listeners and watchers.
Thank you for inviting me.
And everybody, if you have enjoyed listening to this or watching this, then please do subscribe to our YouTube our YouTube channel or your normal podcast platform if you prefer just to listen to our beautiful Essex accents audio only. Now, Laurie, do you think we should tell them what's going to happen on our next episode?
Well, I'm going to cringe inwardly now and say absolutely not, because I think it's really important that we keep them
in suspense. Let the naffness continue. Bye.